Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jeff Calkins is columnist of the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN from 9 to 11 on X, Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm good.
Good to hear. Good to hear. You ready for the game tonight? Excited for the game tonight?
Well, it's less important that I'm ready than that the Grizzlies team is
ready.
Well,
of course,
but am I excited about it? I am. I mean, I think winning would be such fun, you know, in a season that has delivered not a lot of fun in the last third of the season. Winning would be such fun. Now, I have a certain amount of dread as well. Like, I hate watching, you know, Steph and Draymond celebrate in front of that crowd and all of that if they, you know, roll to victory. I remember, you know, Steph hitting the half quarter against the Grizzlies in 2015 or whatever. Yep. That was. You know, so we've seen a lot of their celebrations, and those things drive me crazy a little bit. They cause pain. But I think there is – I mean, I've sort of talked myself into the idea – that there is a real possibility here. And I've really talked to myself in the idea that there's a real opportunity here, that for as bad as the back third of the season has gone, to have this game on this stage against this team is an opportunity to really do something fun and change the vibes and change the narrative a little bit about you. You know, can't win in California, can't beat a good team. You know, Ja's just, all he cares about is celebrations. The team is soft. Whatever it is, the criticism that you have with this team, I think it's an opportunity for them. And so I'm excited for that.
Do you think that they, with a win tonight, can save the feelings around this season? For the general fan out there, for themselves, do you think they can save – a bit of joy if they're able to go in this season? Or do you think, you know, obviously you're going to get in the 2-7 matchup, you have to make some headway in that for you to sort of still feel like you're up above, you're afloat?
Yeah, I mean, it's all, of course, if you then get destroyed by Houston in 4 games, it doesn't. So what it would do, it would give you a signature night, and it would just be a lot of fun for all kinds of reasons. Among others, you know, all the things that go with triumph, but then to send the Warriors into another play-in game and then to send the Warriors possibly into a series against OKC and to send yourself into a series against Houston, which we imagine is, would be more competitive, or you'd have more of a shot, than against OKC. I mean, there's a lot of things that I think would help you emerge from this with better feelings. It's funny though. Like, I was talking to my son Peter, who's the most fervent of the Grizzly fans in my family, and he's sort of checked out a little bit. Like, he said, he rooms with someone else from Memphis, and that person was enraged as they went down to defeat to Minnesota. And Peter was like, "Yeah, you know what? I kind of already give up on this year. And I do think there's an element of the fan base that has sort of, yeah, they're just not very good. Remind me when it starts again next year. But I am of the view that, I mean, here's the thing. If they lose tonight, and then whether they lose Friday or whether they lose in 4 or 5 to OKC, that's a pretty dismal end to a pretty dismal, either way, it's a dismal end to a dismal back third of the season. And this, there would be nothing dismal about a win tonight. It would be joyous. It would be triumphant. And I really think it would be an opportunity to remind people how much fun it can be. And so save the season is how I put it in my column. And maybe that's a little bit of a reach, but I do think flip the narrative a little on what this team is and what it's capable of. I think they really have a chance to do that tonight.
It's kind of the equivalent, though, like if you liken it to like Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. You could struggle an entire season if you win that rivalry game. You feel pretty good about yourself. I think that's sort of the aura of the idea you're going for the most part, when you say it could salvage their season.
I think that's right. But I think that's a huge part of it. It's you'll always have that game. You'll always have that triumph and that W to put on the wall. I also think, though, that in order to win tonight, you have to disprove some of the things people think about you. Right. Like, I mean, I was driving in this morning to the radio show, and I heard Chris Canty, who's the part of the show before mine, the national show that's before mine.
Unsportsmanlike.
Yeah. And he said, you know, they were talking about the game. He said, the Grizzlies just aren't very good. You know, that's what he said. He said, they're not, like, come on now, the Grizzlies aren't good. And, you know, I think that's sort of, not just nationally, I think locally, there's sort of this sense that, you know, teams isn't very good. And so if you can go into the Chase, you know, and beat the Warriors, you have to do, you know, you will remind people that, okay, maybe you're not a complete team. Maybe you're injured. Maybe you're not as good around the margins as you should be. But Ja, Jaren, and Dez are good, you know? And so I think it's a chance for them to sort of reclaim some pride and some sense of possibility about themselves.
I want to see them reclaim some pride on the defensive end tonight. I think that's the biggest thing. Last time you saw the Grizzlies and the Warriors play, Steph Curry dropped 52. I know you don't have very good perimeter defenders left. Your perimeter defense been bottom three in the league since the trade deadline. But is that not the biggest X factor for tonight? Can the Grizzlies at least be passable on the defensive end? That more than anything on the offensive end is what I'm paying attention to if the Grizzlies are going to have a chance to win.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I was listening, I read Drew Hill's piece on, he did a Q&A with Isalo and ran in today's Daily Memphian, and he talked about, and the first thing, the first question was really about that and about Steph. And Isalo immediately said, you know, when Steph went for 52, he was talking about the shot quality. That's the phrase used, the shot quality. Like, Steph got a bunch of wide-open shots early, and then he went on a Steph heater. But, you know, and so you wonder what some of the problem is literally the roster at this point, the state of the roster, and no Jalen Wells, and the fact that Marcus Smart didn't work out, all the things we know, right? So so I think that's part of it. Part of it is, and this is the thing I probably worry about the most, is because you don't have terrific perimeter defenders, and then because you have, you know, a bunch of inexperienced players who've never played in the playoffs, you know, you've got Zach Edey, and you've got Vince, and you've got Scottie Pippen. You're like, the Warriors, the level of awareness that it takes to play effective defense against the Warriors is, you know, extraordinary.
Right.
And are they capable? Like, you can just see Zach Edey getting torched on back cuts, or Vince losing Steph. Where the hell is Steph anyway? You know, and that's, to me, what bodes ill here, is that, and it's a phrase that Chris Harrington uses a lot, is it defensive awareness. He was actually wondering whether Conchar might get some minutes today. You know, we'll see how the rotation goes. But, you know, Santi, Luke, you know, like Santi was like minus 26 against the Warriors.
Well, people don't like hearing this, but every time I've seen John Conchar play in the Tomas Asalo era, if that's what you want to call it, he's actually given some pretty decent minutes.
Well, that's the thing. And he's not going to score, but he will rebound, and he, you know, and he plays with some awareness, you know. So is he a guy that you might want to deploy? Is Pippen really the best defender maybe that you have, and he's going to get the bulk of the minutes against Steph? I think we'll see. You're going into a, you know, a gunfight here a little bit with spoons in terms of perimeter defenders, so it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah,
and the NBA may fine me for the gunfight reference, but I do think it'll be interesting to see what they do there defensively. Who, you know, are you going to try to outscore them with Luke and Santi, or are you going to in fact be deploying, you know, Conchar and going that direction?
All right, now I have to ask you this: have you ever been a part of a situation where a franchise has made such a bad misstep that they only invite selected media members to a roundtable discussion with the said GM that made those terrible decisions, and they don't allow you to bring in recording devices or cameras? Have you ever been in a situation like that, like what unfolded today in Dallas with Nico Harrison and the Mavs?
No, I mean, I've been in some interesting, like during the Mark Gasol Fizdale thing, they had, and it wasn't because they were trying to protect Mark or whatever, but there was a select few of us that met with Mark in that circumstance. I remember that after the fallout there and Fizdale was fired. And then there are also lots of conversations that are off the record, but it's very clear that, I mean, they've made a complete debacle of it. And the idea that here's the other thing. The traditional end of the season availability is a public availability. I mean, it is for the media. It's not for a select few protected media. So if you wanted to do, during the course of a season, a sit down with the GM and one reporter, I mean, hell, people do that all the time, right? You get that all the time. But I've never seen literally the end of the season press availability have to be sheltered in this way. It's such an unmitigated disaster, and the problem with it is that it is the biggest betrayal of a fan base by a front office that I've ever heard of. You know, I guess like when the Florida Marlins were, you know, win the championship and then were blown up, that was a betrayal of a fan base. But there really was no fan base. Like, that was the problem with the Marlins. There was not much of a fan base to betray, and you knew it was just because of, like, they're cheap, right? Here, there's no reason for it. There's literally no reason for it, and it's hard to even get your mind around.
One thing I can't understand, one, obviously today doing that whole thing, that's pretty cowardly not to have cameras.
Totally cowardly.
Or recording devices in there. But what I don't understand was one of the questions that was asked of Nico is, do you feel any obligation toward the fans of the Dallas Mavericks? And he answered it by saying, no, I feel an obligation toward the Dallas Mavericks. I don't know about you, but okay, like I get what you're trying to say, but aren't the fans inherently a big part of the damn franchise that you're claiming to protect? They're the ones that buy into the product. They're the ones that buy season tickets. They're the ones that fill your pockets with the revenue that you ultimately pass down and pass out to your players. So aren't the Dallas Mavericks and the Dallas Mavericks fans kind of the same thing, kind of at least in the same ballpark, to where you can't just say no?
I mean,
I don't feel an obligation to the fans.
It's totally crazy. They are your customers. It would be like a restaurant saying, no, I have no obligation to the people who eat here. I mean, it's the dumbest thing in the world. Fred Smith, no. Are the people who ship our products? No, we have no obligation to those people. I only have an obligation to the employees. No, the obligation is to the customer. Like, literally, if he shouldn't have been fired already, that's another reason to fire him. If he doesn't understand that your fundamental obligation is to the customer, that's the obligation, is to the customer. And so, yes, it's an insane answer.
I don't get how they're so bad at PR, though, too. You think that you, as an NBA franchise, would have that figured out. I don't think they consulted the PR department for any of these things, but the idea of what they did today, correct me if I'm wrong, is some level of PR, trying to at least clear things up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's the opposite of what you would want to do in this situation. I can't get it. But hey, it is what it is. Also, speaking of PR, I think the PR battle for Nico Iamaleava has been lost to the University of Tennessee, because now everybody's waiting for a fire sale. Everybody's waiting for Nico and his dad to come down on price before they get involved with that. I have not caught up with you on this situation at all. I do find it interesting. There's still people deflecting blame to the NCAA, and I agree. Like, it's, you know, the culture they have created when it comes to transfer portal and NIL, it is unstructured, unregulated, unruly. But I do find it ridiculous to not place any blame at the feet of Nico and his dad. If you're one that wants to just say the NCAA's done this wrong, you shouldn't be blaming Nico, I think you're wrong in that sentiment as well.
I honestly don't see in this situation how you can be blaming the NCAA. If you want to blame college football, the administration, for the way they've handled this and dragged their feet and reject collective bargaining or any solution that could work, that's fine. But the truth of the matter is, short of that, we know that there's nothing the NCAA can do to regulate this stuff, or it'll be an antitrust violation. And let's be clear, when they tried to regulate it, and we're looking into Nico's contract originally, what happened? The state of Tennessee and Virginia sued the NCAA. So you can't exactly be blaming the NCAA for this one. The blame is clearly, and I think everybody is, like, this is the rare situation where everyone is applauding Tennessee for saying no person's bigger than the program, right? And good for them. Clap, 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 clap. Here's the thing. If Nico were the best quarterback in the country, they would have paid the bill, you know, like they would have paid the bill. And so, and the truth of the matter is that the weird thing about this one is it went so public and it became so fractured, but players renegotiate this stuff all the time.
Sure.
All the time. So this one is, because it got public and now Tennessee's getting all this credit for telling him to go take a hike, which I think was a business decision on the part of Tennessee. They said, listen, he's not worth this. He's not worth more money. And so Nico, you know, looks, and the family clearly look like they've bungled this. But the other problem is that there's no solution to it. You know, this is going to keep happening. People are like, is this going to be the turning point? No, you don't think people aren't going to still, the next quarterback isn't going to ask for more money wherever they are, whether they're at Ohio State or Notre Dame or wherever, they're going to keep asking for money. It won't blow up publicly.
I think it should be a lesson, potentially, for some of those guys to think twice before they go to the negotiating table with no leverage. You know?
Well, no. I mean, in the end, you ask what you can ask for, and then if you don't get it, I mean, we just saw an offensive lineman leave Memphis for Colorado, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he went to Memphis and asked for more first or whatever, but this happens all the time. People ask for more money. They either get it or they don't. And you don't see the whole withholding of services. I think that was the big mistake, and they should have known from a PR perspective that looks like, as a quarterback and a leader, you just look like you are, you know, like you don't stand for what you're supposed to stand for. So I think from a PR perspective, they made a mistake. And I think there's PR lessons in that maybe for other players. But without employment contracts, and NIL contracts are not employment contracts.
Right.
They're not.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drive deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Nico didn't have a quarterback a contract like Ja. Ja has a contract that obligates him to play for the Memphis Grizzlies. Period. He can't go play for, so he can't enter a portal and go play for someone else. Nico didn't have that contract. He had a personal, you know, services contract that enabled, you know, about public appearances and whatnot. But he didn't have an employment contract with Tennessee. And short of that, I really don't see what the answer is here, except for everybody to keep this stuff quiet on the down low, use the leverage that you have to try to get the most money you have, and then if you can't get more money, either fold or transfer quietly.
Yeah, just have leverage is all I can say. Have leverage.
I mean, he had enough leverage that he had $2.5 million. He had $2.4 million, right?
But then the question that I've been asking the entire time, and most people are asking, did he even live up to that from a you know, valuation standpoint?
Barely. Yeah, not really. It's kind of astounding that he felt like he could go in.
But this also is another, this is where I hope people learn. This is why I want it to be a lesson for other guys in his position. This is a you know, the age old sort of adage or conversation we have about family and business. Your dad and your family is going to think that you're the best thing since sliced bread. You don't always have to listen to them about what your value is.
I think that's totally right.
Now, go find somebody who understands these things.
Yep. Find someone who's good at this, who's done it before, whose opinion you trust, and then listen to them. Yes, you can have your your family be part of the circle, because your family, no one cares about you more than your family and all of that. But in the end, you go hire people who are good at their jobs, who have done this before, and you let them handle it and you trust them. I think that is an important lesson to take from all of this.
For sure. Well, Jeff, I appreciate it, man. We'll talk again on Thursday.
Yeah, hope for the best. See ya.
Yes, sir. He is Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X, Daily Memphian Commerce, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN from 9 to 11. Now, we're going to switch gears and get into a little bit of NFL draft talk. And I want to focus on the prospects that we know will likely be taken in the first round out of the University of Colorado, Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter spoke to CBS Sports recently, and he gave out a quote. We're 9 days out from the first day of the NFL draft in Green Bay. Next Thursday, round one will get going. There's two guys that will likely be picked in round number one from the same school in Colorado that have made more headlines than anybody else. That would be Shedeur Sanders and, of course, Travis Hunter. We'll start with Travis Hunter for this conversation because an interesting article was published in CBS Sports about Travis Hunter and his thoughts regarding where he should be picked and what he should be picked to play. We know he's a cornerback and a wide receiver. He is the only player since at least 2017 with at least 250 snaps played on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball in a single season. He played 713 offensive snaps, 748 defensive snaps, and he, of course, was the Heisman of the college football season last year. Now, when he was asked about if the team that picked him did not want to play him on both sides of the ball, how he would react, this is the quote he gave CBS Sports. I would never play football again because I've been doing it my whole life and I love being on the football field. I feel like I could dominate on each side of the ball, so I really enjoyed doing it. I will say this, that is a ridiculous bluff that makes no sense whatsoever. He would still play football if the team decided to play him at either cornerback or wide receiver. But I think there's a deeper conversation to be had there. If you do only view Travis Hunter as a wide receiver or a cornerback, is he worth a value spot at the top of the draft? I thought Ryan Clark gave an interesting answer earlier on NFL Live. I think what Ryan Clark had to say was level-headed and correct. When you look at Travis Hunter as a wide receiver prospect, he's very good, likely a first-round pick, probably not a top-five pick as he's being slated right now. If you use him as a cornerback, yeah, probably a first-round pick, but not a top-five pick like he's being slated right now. The allure and the whole idea behind Travis Hunter, and we have no precedent for this because we've never seen a guy play at this high level on both sides of the ball. The allure, though, is that you could steal two guys in one draft pick. That's the value that you get with Travis Hunter. Now, will he be able to play as many snaps as he did at the college level on both sides of the ball? I think that's, you know, going to be an uphill battle. I don't think that's very likely. You have bigger, better athletes, harder hits, more collisions, and it'll be hard to stay healthy over a 17, potentially coming soon, an 18-game season going into the playoffs as well with even more games than that. You get into the 20s if you make a long run into the NFL playoffs. So I think there is some risk and some things you have to iron out. Where do you split his time? Does he play more corner? Does he play more wide receiver? But I think Ryan Clark is correct in the fact that if you picked one side of the ball, he's not a top five pick. But when you combine the both and realize that you get the value out of Travis Hunter, the best value out of Travis Hunter, because you're stealing one of the best offensive playmakers and defensive playmakers in the draft, you get two guys in one. That's where the top five value comes in. So to sort of back up Travis Hunter and his thoughts of himself, I do believe that if you're going to draft Travis Hunter as high as he is projected to be drafted, you do need to give a thought to playing him on both sides of the ball.
That being said, would you take Travis Hunter in a top three pick?
I personally, I am very high on Travis Hunter. So yes, I would take him in those slots. And I also think with the franchises that have a chance to take him, we're talking about the Browns and
right.
the Giants, they need some excitement. One thing Travis Hunter can do is bring some excitement to you. He may be rough. If you play him on both sides of the ball the first year, he's not focusing on one side of the ball. It may be a little bit of a learning curve for him, a little bit tougher for him. Even though he has exceeded expectations at every level, we're talking high school, college, whether it's FCS or FBS with Colorado and Jackson State, he's always exceeded expectations. He may do that again at the NFL level, even his rookie season. But yeah, I think considering how good he is on both sides of the ball, considering he really can help you on both sides of the ball and be a starter and a high level performer for you. Yeah, I would take him as a top five pick in this year's NFL draft. And I do think one thing that's being under discussed, Connor, I think that this draft is just not as deep or as good as we have seen in the past. The quarterback position is something we've talked about. Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders leave a little bit to be desired compared to last year where you had six quarterbacks in the top 12. But I think the top-end talent's not as high as it usually is in this particular draft. And I think Travis Hunter is the cream of the crop when it comes to that conversation. Who is the most talented, most gifted player in this year's draft? I think Travis Hunter's at the top of that conversation.
How long do you think Travis Hunter would realistically be able to play both sides of the ball in the NFL? Do you think it's for his career? Do you think it'd be for the first couple of seasons?
I think you have to be careful. First contract, I think you could get away with it. I do think you need to skew those snaps to one side of the ball at least a little bit. Maybe you could game plan it, right? You could
depending on matchup,
what team you're playing, you could skew it to offense, skew it to defense. I don't think it's something where he can play, you know, 15 years in the NFL and play both sides every single year. Eventually,
sure,
the body breaks down on you. He's a young man right now. He's not always going to be a young man. So you have to be careful with limiting his snaps and making sure he doesn't get hurt later in his career. But I think for most of his first contract, you can find a way to get him involved and be a pretty substantial playmaker for you on both sides of the ball.
Which side do you think he's most talented at?
Most talented is kind of interesting I don't think he's been able to hone in his craft on either side of the ball. I think as a wide receiver, though, that's where I see him with this particular class of wide receivers, this particular crop of wide receivers where you have Tet McMillan and Matthew Golden, and those are the guys sort of at the top of the draft. I think he stands out a whole lot more as a wide receiver in this particular draft. But I still think he can play corner in the National Football League. If you sit him there as a zone corner, let him roam a little bit, make some plays on the football like he did at Colorado, he can be of some pretty high importance to you on the defensive side of the ball as well. But I think wide receiver for the most part. Now, moving on to Shedeur Sanders, the news of the day with the New York Giants holding the third overall pick in the NFL draft is that the Giants have decided to give a private workout to Shedeur Sanders. They have 9 days of the NFL draft. They don't want to waste those 9 days. They want to see if Shedeur Sanders is worth taking at the number 3 overall pick because they need to find an answer at quarterback. We know that they signed Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, but those are short-term gap quarterbacks. They need to find somebody for the future. And if Cam Ward's going to be off the board at number 1 of the Titans, Shedeur Sanders is the next best option. Now, I want to say this, and I don't want people to misconstrue what I have to say here, but there is the thought out there that Shedeur Sanders getting picked by the Giants may be the worst possible thing for him and the Giants ultimately, and I tend to, for the most part, agree with the sentiment that's being shared. What is the sentiment, you ask? Well, let's think about the Giants organization. At the GM position, you have Joe Shane, who is, by all, you know, accounts, very much on the hot seat. He's a guy that the Giants are thinking about moving on from very, very soon if the Giants don't show pretty substantial progress coming up this season. And let's think about Brian Daboll. Horrible year last year. Wasn't able to maximize anything with that team since Saquon Barkley left. They had a horrible year. They kept him for one more year. He is also a coach that if you did hot seat rankings, he would ultimately be in the top 5 among NFL sitting head coaches right this second. I think it would be a bad move by the Giants organization to go get a guy like Shedeur Sanders, have a bad year, which seems to be very much on the table, and then get rid of both coach and GM and have Shedeur Sanders left over for the GM and the coach to follow. Because what happens, we've seen it with the Bears, we've seen it with multiple organizations, whether it was, you know, Mitch Trubisky and Tressman with the Bears moving on to Matt Nagy, or it was Justin Fields who came in with Matt Nagy, then you moved on from Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace and brought in Ryan Poles and the next coach. You have to be careful about drafting a quarterback that ultimately the next GM and next coach have no real tie to because they ultimately did not bring him into that organization. So I think you need to be careful about that. I think it would be a misstep by the Giants, and it would be bad for Shedeur Sanders' career if he got picked there. They had a tough year. Ultimately, they move off of the two guys, GM and coach, that are on the hot seat, and Shedeur Sanders is left over for the next guys to sort of pick up and figure out what they want to do with. That's never been a good thing. Never been a good thing. I think they need to wait to see what they want to do with GM and head coach before they get into the business of a young quarterback. But also, for Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter, I don't know if you saw this yesterday, Connor. They're both going to have their numbers retired for Colorado football, 2-12 respectively, during the spring game coming up on Saturday. Can I ask you your thoughts on this?
I think your initial thought is, huh, that's a bit soon and maybe a bit odd for those two to have their jerseys retired. But then I think if you give it a moment of thought and you actually look into what the numbers are, one, Travis Hunter, Heisman winner, one of the most important players in your history, helped bring your program back from the dead. I don't think that there's really any argument whether or not his jersey should be retired.
Yeah, he's a
Heisman winner, absolutely retire it. He's one of the most exciting players we've ever seen in college football. Shedeur, I think on the surface, can seem a bit odd that he's getting his jersey retired. But then when you look at the numbers and you realize how many records he holds at Colorado, and again, he was part of that group that helped bring your team back from the dead, is it weird that he's getting his jersey retired while his dad's still the coach and 1 year removed from when he was there? Sure. At the end of the day, though, I'm kind of like, yeah, I get it. I understand why his jersey would be retired. And the other argument is, well, if his jersey's retired, then this person's jersey should be retired.
Cordell Stewart is the one that everybody's
sure. It's just because his jersey's being retired doesn't mean that nobody else's jersey should be retired. Both things can be true at the same time. Overall, though, my opinion on jersey retirements is I just don't really care that much about whose jersey is retired, especially if they hold records at a school or they're a Heisman winner. I'm not going to pretend as if there's some rule book or checklist for why jerseys should have to be retired. I think that some people are making far too big of a deal of this.
Well, because of the bias that they have against Shedeur's dad and Coach Prime and the way he's run things. And you know, I think the people that are very outwardly against this need to look within themselves and ask them why they're so angry about it and why they need to make a case against Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter. Well, Shedeur Sanders in particular getting his jersey retired. I'll say it's too quick. You should not be retiring a jersey this soon after those guys' career. Travis Hunter, without question, like you said, should be retired. He's a Heisman, one of the few Heismans that Colorado's ever had. But I think people do need to take a moment to look up Shedeur Sanders and how good his college career was. He has over 100 school records at Colorado. He broke the program's passing touchdown record over a two-season period. Longest passing touchdown streak in FBS and FCS history. He won the Unitas Award. He was a second-team All-American. He was Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. If you combine his FCS and his FBS career passing yardage, he is top 15 all-time in Division I football for passing yardage in a career. He has a lot of the checklist items that it takes to ultimately get your jersey retired at a certain place. You can argue it's too quick. You can do all those things. But I feel like Shedeur is well within his rights. I think Coach Prime is well within his rights to retire Shador's jersey. Was it too quick? Sure. But I think that Shedeur has made the case. And I also want people to chew on this for a second, and you may disagree with my thought process on this. I think in a decade, when we look back at what this era meant to Colorado football and to the Big 12 and to the history of college football, what are we going to be saying about Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders' impact at the University of Colorado. I want people to just think about that. Don't give an answer. Don't hit me up on social media about it. Just think about how we'll be discussing their impact in a decade. Because to me, I feel like we'll be talking about them very, very glowingly and what they were able to accomplish in their very short time at Colorado with Coach Prime. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we'll get to small talk. And small talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. I'm going to go to the worst thing I saw yesterday, and that has to do with a space trip and a space flight. That it was an all-female crew, which is cool. But when I tell you who was in this all-female crew for Blue Origin, which is Jeff Bezos's SpaceX, likened it to SpaceX with Elon Musk, that's what he did. He sent his now girlfriend, Lauren Sanchez, Gail King, and Katy Perry into space yesterday. It also included the real people that made it happen, NASA rocket scientist Aisha Bowe, bioastronautics research scientist Amanda Nguyen, and Wynn, and film producer Carrie Ann Flynn. The entire flight lasted 8 minutes, and I just don't know why it was done. Here's Katy Perry's quote on the whole thing. Space is finally going to be glam. Let me tell you something. If I could take glam up with me, I would do that. We are going to put the ass in astronaut. No, just make of that what you will. I'm going to go ahead and get to it.